Welcome to the Over My Dead Body podcast. I'm your host, Alex Liddington Cox. It is February 29th. It's a leap year. This is an OMDB podcast sit rep episode, the situation report. And it's where we wrap up all the latest dad news, my news, and answer some listener questions on the last day of the month. Our interview show lands on the 15th of every month. We'll be speaking to my buddy Alex Breeden, who's joining me on a sober month. Parched March. We'll be chatting fatherhood, booze, and raising three children. Three! Absolutely mad stuff. So be sure to check that out. But for now, let's get into the sit rep.
Ray, the battalion commander, offered no sit rep.
Sit rep.
Sit rep. It's all broken.
It's all broken. In industrial relations news.
Smithers, I'm beginning to think that Homer Simpson was not the brilliant tactician I thought he was.
Gender divide. The Australian Workplace Gender Equality Agency released statistics on the gender pay gap at Australia's largest companies, which provided details on the problem, but no real surprises. White-collar industries such as banking, accounting, and consulting employed more men in their most demanding and lucrative roles, fueling pay disparities that mean women earn 20% less than men. While energy and resources companies registered some of the highest overall pay gaps thanks to a greater share of men working offshore and on remote sites, in operational roles that attract away-from-home allowances and higher pay. We knew all this. All the focus is naturally on mothers missing out on salary. But equally, this data tells the story of how fathers sell their time that they would like to spend with their children, especially in the early years, to their employers more than mothers. You need to make paternity leave government funded and use it or lose it. Mothers cannot compete against men or women who don't have kids. They're going to work harder than you, harder than all of us. End of story. But they can compete against fathers if those fathers take paternity leave, because then parents will be taking an equal amount of time out of the workforce. Disconnected, right? The Australian government passed laws that will ban employees from being contacted outside of work hours, although the government said it would tweak the legislation to prevent bosses from facing criminal charges. Tension is emerging between parents and workplaces over whether the right to disconnect laws are compatible with workplace flexibility arrangements. Personally, I think you've probably got to pick one. Speaking of flexibility, office vacancy rates climbed to a near three-decade high thanks to hybrid work arrangements. Now, stop telling me I'm not as productive in the office. Grow a set and renegotiate your office lease, which is the primary driver for the return to office mantra. Just staying in Australia for a moment, Senator Raf Chione, sorry I'm getting that name wrong, has become the first male politician to take his newborn baby onto the floor of the Senate. And I was like, how has it taken this long? Staying close to home, New Zealand's all-time test run scorer Kane Williamson is sitting out the T20 series with Australia due to paternity leave. The absence hasn't detracted from the spectacle. There was an absolute cracker run chase the other night. Taiwan's fatherly shift. Legislative changes from the Taiwanese government in 2021 has seen paternity leave rates soar in Taiwan. Meanwhile, according to HR Today, in the US, nearly one-fifth of companies plan to increase the size of their current parental leave programs. In Japan, 80% of Japanese firms say paternity leave sits at below 3 months, and they're desperately trying to lift that. Paternity leave levels are also rising in Romania, which has one of the most generous parental leave policies in Europe. Elsewhere, a professor of communication studies at the University of North Carolina has demonstrated she should stick to her field after saying some really dumb shit about paternity leave. To quote the story, fathers who take paternity leave are more strategic about theirs since it's not tied to physical recovery. Many opt to take it at any point within the first year of their child's birth, which allows them to consider how the leave affects their career. Quote, men can pick to take it when it's convenient for them or when it will benefit them the most, unquote. Did this communications academic speak to any fathers for this unfathomable piece of bullshit? I'm sure there are isolated situations where fathers do take pat leave at a time that they choose, But everyone else just goes, hey, honey, when's your mat leave finishing? We're not going to put the kid into daycare. I will take over the moment your mat leave is exhausted. The story appeared in The Guardian, which is basically a room full of Eeyores. Oh, better not be happy about anything now.
It's called the Career Aptitude Normalizing Test, or CANT.
In education news, government funding of Australia's public schools continues to lag mandated levels, while public funding of private schools continues to exceed. Roughly one third of Australian students are not reading proficiently, although this is increasingly a problem across large swaths of the developed world. Listen to these chaps.
Well, I'm an old boy of the school, and my son is also an old boy. And the intention was always that I'd have a grandson. But I won't bring him to a co-ed school.
It's all part of this sort of woke, toxic masculinity type palaver.
We have another meeting tonight that we're going to try and look at more at the legal side.
Those are fathers of students at Newington College, a prestigious private school in Sydney that announced it would go fully co-ed by 2023. Now, here's the thing. I went to a private school that was all boys and became co-ed at some point in the mid-90s. And going co-ed has got nothing to do with wokeness. It's got everything to do with business. These are private institutions. They are businesses, and they are looking to profit and expand. Co-ed schools are more attractive to private school fee-paying parents. You need only read Newington's statement announcing the move to see how obvious that is. To illustrate the point, co-educational schools nudged ahead of their single-sex rivals as parents grapple with choosing the type of education that will get the best results for their children. But all-girls schools continue to dominate their boys-only counterparts, both in the most recent results and in long-term trends. So the order of academic performance for private schools in Australia goes like this, and this order is not in dispute. All-girls schools first, co-ed schools second, all boys schools a noticeable last. I rest my case. Meanwhile, the right to disconnect, we spoke of that earlier, also extends to teachers. But the question is, will parents actually give that right to them? That's the question raised by Adam Voigt, a CEO and former principal, in a newspaper op-ed this month. And finally, G8 Education, Australia's largest share market listed childcare provider, has conceded a 4.5% fee increase could increase its margins and profits in the later set of results. The average fees charged by the Gold Coast Group is $151 a day. Now, private centres will tend to emphasise the sort of extracurricular activities. We do language lessons, blah, blah, blah. But I am concerned with how stable is your roster of staff and what is their level of experience. Moving to 80-year worries about the world we've brought our kids into.
I don't understand what the fucking news is. It's just like, hey, here's a bunch of shit you can't fix that happened that was horrible.
Hey, I used to be a journalist. Nah, tornado. Expected Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump said he would encourage Vladimir Putin to attack NATO allies if they haven't invested enough in defense. Now, granted, he might not have actually said that. The guy is endlessly full of shit, but the implications of what he said have massive consequences for the kind of world order that we have brought our children into. Now, for my Australian listeners, we are not officially a member of NATO. We're part of this program called the Individually Tailored Partner Program. We're basically NATO's equivalent of a roadie. Now, the target for defense spending, which is the thing that Trump is talking about, for NATO members and their affiliates is 2% of GDP. Now, we don't spend 2%. We're expected to get there in a couple of financial years. Now, a decade ago, only three NATO members spent 2%. I remember reporting on this for Business Spectator when I was in New York. This was a big issue for the Obama administration as they tried to gently cajole their allies to foot up their end of the bargain. Anyway, a decade ago, there were only three NATO members that spent the 2%. That has leapt to double digits in the last few years, and Trump will claim credit for that. But in actual fact, it's mostly because of the practical fears that a number of nations have for an increasingly aggressive and muscular China and Russia. Now, why does this matter? It's because I tend to worry about, like, what sort of world order are my children going to have to be a part of for the next 80-odd to 100 years of their lives? Where do I think this is going? Regardless of whether or not Trump wins the next election, I think that the strength of NATO will continue to weaken in the decades to come. And the reason is this. Most Americans haven't seen their real wages lift since the 1970s. Their political class, which sells the benefits of NATO to the average punter, is unable to articulate why continuing to invest so much in their military is good for the man on the street. And most Americans just don't care anymore about America's role as the overseer of the rules-based international order, even though there's a lot of evidence to suggest that all Americans do benefit from that. I'll tell you a quick story. In 2012, I was covering Obama's re-election, and I was mates with a Democratic speechwriter from Brooklyn. And he was like, do you want to watch the count with me? And I'm like, absolutely. And eventually he said, let's go to a lesbian bar. A lesbian bar in New York, that is going to be a Democratic area. I'm just like, fan-fucking-tastic. So we're watching the count, getting shit-faced. We're the only two males in the whole thing. And Obama takes the stage. And as he's going through his speech, I notice that I'm cheering louder than anyone else there. And they're like, why are you so enthusiastic? I'm like, this is the leader of the free world. And they were just like, yeah, but he is just our president. So the myth of America being the leader of the free world no longer resonates with America's average person because the political class have betrayed them over decades. And so the consequence of that is the political argument in America that underpins their significant funding towards NATO, which is so crucial to the rules-based international order that our children are going to sit in for the next 80 to 100 years, is fundamentally, and I would argue, fatally weakened. So is Trump's rhetoric counterproductive? Absolutely. Is he an evil asshat? 100%. But the rage that he is articulating comes from a very real place to the man on the street. Turning to children's online safety, meanwhile, Facebook billionaire Mark Zuckerberg gave victims of families of child exploitation a passive apology during a US Senate committee hearing on child online safety laws. Facebook also turned 20 this month. It is worth $1 trillion. 6 out of the top 10 apps downloaded last year belong to Meta. But private messaging has eclipsed the public posting that made Facebook famous in the first place, which is good and bad for parents. On the plus side, you're much less likely to be radicalized when you're in a private chat. Membership is regulated and messages are listed chronologically, which means you don't have an incentive to be as inflammatory. But closed groups also mean the power of social media to project positive messages that can change people for the better is muted. It's the opposite of what social media promised when it was introduced to us. The shift has also killed youth-oriented publishers, which is a real shame. Now, I did some consulting work for one such company in the last 6 months about how to position itself for advertisers who bought the line that social media was gobbling up all the attention of their target audience. The company abandoned the project before it even started and shortly thereafter abandoned the Australian market altogether. And a bit of news out of left field, energy prices. Well, kind of. Now, perhaps a small number of you would be familiar with a recently failed attempt by Brookfield, a massive, massive investor, global investor, to take over Australian energy gentailer Origin Energy. I'm sure some of my Australian listeners have a bill with Origin Energy. Shareholders voted it down. But something I only just caught up on, in October last year, something very interesting happened. Brookfield, the Canadian investment giant, and its US private equity partner EIG had pledged to spend $20 to $30 billion building 12 gigawatts of wind, solar, and storage to turbocharge Origin's shift to clean energy. They argued the resultant, quote, public benefit, unquote, should offset any detrimental impact on energy market competition from Brookfield's parallel ownership, which was intended to be ring-fenced, to transmission and distribution infrastructure. So basically, they acquire this company and they are a very vertically integrated, potentially anti-competitive energy player in the Australian energy market. Now, I used to write on mergers and acquisitions and the regulatory impacts of them about a decade ago. And if you tried this line back then, that our acquisition, while bad for consumers when it comes to the prices that they pay for electricity, is good for the environment, you would have been laughed out of the room. Well, the boss of Australia's competition regulator, Gina Cascott-Lieb, bought that argument. So I just thought that was really cool. And it struck me as something generational. This is the first time a competition regulator has said something that has spoken to my generation. And I just thought that that was noteworthy. In science news.
Well, the real humans won't burn quite so fast in there. Why?
Why? Researchers from the University of Massachusetts have found no evidence that lower levels of testosterone or cortisol in fathers after birth of a child lead to depression. Now, this link has been suggested as an explanation as to why first-time fathers in particular experience paternal postpartum depression. Their testosterone and cortisol levels go down. And men's rights activists consistently advocate for higher levels of testosterone as being manly and bleh. But anyway, what we found out is that lower levels of testosterone and cortisol don't necessarily mean that a father is at risk of elevated levels of depression. There's something else going on. Maybe that is the introduction of a child. Meanwhile, researchers have found Australian fathers actually want to be involved dads even during unplanned pregnancies. Oh, who knew? Not sure what accent that was. Meanwhile, women who exercise regularly have a lower risk of an early death or fatal heart attack or stroke than men who exercise regularly, even when women put in less effort, according to international researchers. That's according to the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Now, what does that mean for us fellas? It means that you have to take your physical health seriously, arguably more seriously than your partner's. And, you know, that's a pretty foundational piece of evidence when it comes to, hey, honey, do I have time to go out for a run today? Meanwhile, in France, vasectomies are on the rise off a very low base because vasectomies are apparently very un-French. And in Alabama, it's been proposed that rapists should be castrated. Am I the only one who think that's okay as a proposal until you find out that it's from Alabama? In relationship news.
I love you.
Fuck off.
Whoa. Hun. That was tense. One in seven Australian adults now has a de facto partner following a sharp decline in marriages amongst those aged under 35. If you want to have a wedding, have a wedding. Just don't get married. That's what we did. Magic mushrooms, LSD, and other psychedelic drugs increase sexual function and may be able to save struggling relationships, according to a study from the Imperial College of London. Get it in ya! Don't know many doctors that are prescribing it, though. And according to Psychology Today, unequal division of labor can be detrimental to relationships.
Oh, do you think so, Doctor?
Yeah, no shit. In celebrity dad news.
Channel 6's own Krusty the Clown has gathered members of the entertainment community, who normally steer clear of fashionable causes, for a video called We're Sending Our Love Down the Well.
There's a hole in my heart, as deep as a well. It's a great song. Swept by Swift, Taylor Swift is sweeping the Australian continent, selling hundreds of thousands of tickets across the capital cities, and you only need to check out some of the social media footprint. It's a big fuck, it's a Godzilla-sized footprint, to see there are stacks of dad in the crowd enjoying the show with their daughters. Elsewhere, Batman Robert Pattinson is set to become a father. When's the last time an actor had a baby while being cast as Batman? I'd be interested to know that. Christian Bale, I don't think, did it. Michael Keaton don't. Michael Keaton was cast as Batman. Just, that feels unfair to somebody. Celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay has likened parenting six kids to, quote, running a restaurant where no one goes home. This is a good line. If you want to see what made that guy great, watch Ramsay's Boiling Point, the original TV series that he was on, where when he was yelling at people who are excellent chefs and cook hands and waiters who it meant the world to them to be working for that guy. So the anger actually meant something. Meanwhile, his scrambled eggs recipe is the shit. Look that up on YouTube. Like, if you really want to increase the quality of your breakfast cooking, get Gordon Ramsay's scrambled eggs into you. Robert De Niro said fatherhood has not lost its shine after more than 50 years, probably because he's got three nannies who are all doing the actual fathering for him. And Tom Hollander has become a father for the first time at 56. If you can't quite place that guy, that's a compliment to him. He's in Gosford Park, in the Loop, White Lotus, and every time you see this guy, you just go, ah, oh, I am in safe hands, and he's funny as fuck.
Hello there, hi.
So is war unforeseeable, Minister?
Look, all sorts of things that are actually very likely are also unforeseeable. For the plane in the fog, the mountain is unforeseeable, but then it is suddenly very real and inevitable.
Right.
Is this your opinion, or is this the government position?
The mountain in the metaphor is a completely hypothetical mountain that could represent anything.
Sorry, Minister, I'm unclear.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that to walk the road of peace, sometimes we need to be ready to climb the mountain of conflict. Thank you so much.
We'll be climbing the mountain alone, Minister.
Happy for that guy. Street level dad news.
This was the 80s, man. There were no helmets.
Police have rescued a boy stuck in a claw toy machine. The boy's dad from southeast Queensland said his kid was having the time of his life in the rig machine. How the fuck did he get in there? Surely you get to take half a dozen of them home. Bluey is golden. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Bluey was the most watched TV show in the week of January 15 to 21. Bluey came in at 1.5 billion minutes screened. 25% of them came from my house. And speaking of Bluey, celebrities including Kylie and Danny Minogue and Rob Delaney from The Office will star in a YouTube series called Bluey Book Reads. The stars will read the books based on the show. Meanwhile, Sleepy Time is the 14th highest ranked episode of any television show on IMDb. That's pretty fucking impressive. And there is a bumper 28-minute episode of Bluey set to premiere in April, which is going to surprise people because they only do the 6-minute, you know, Bluey classic. They're going to put out a 28-minute episode. I am interested to see how many times they can make me cry in less than half an hour of television. Now it's time for my sit rep. Every month you get to hear the everyday, day-to-day dad concerns your host has been dealing with, starting with the kids. Don't give watermelon to a kid for dessert when they're doing overnight toilet training. I think you can just fill in what happened there. Now, the youngest has stopped biting children at daycare, indeed stopped in general, and we think that, you know, she lost a few of her daycare buddies and she's in a really young room. Like, she's 21 months old, but she's surrounded by babies. None of them can fucking walk. So we think she was kind of lashing out like, I just want someone that can play a little bit rougher with me. So, yeah, she needs to go up a room. And the big news for us is Rachel is going to be taking Hazel to New Zealand to see the family. Beatrix is going to be staying with me, which I'm really excited about. So I get to spend a week of one-on-one time with her. But in the middle of it, we are going to Sydney together because I have had a suddenly scheduled work trip. So, yeah, traveling with a baby on a work trip, that's going to be interesting, but I'm kind of excited just make it work. It's only 2 days. Like, it's not your entire career. It's 2 days. Get through it. It's going to be fun. And she's going to be very, very handy when I'm in a work conversation that I want to get out of. Oh, I have to, you know, tend to my kid. Fuck this. The relationship, it's a bit of a whatever month. I mean, there was one night where I brushed my teeth while I was in the shower and I right in front of Rachel and she just did not notice. So I don't know what that says about our relationship, but it says something. Now, I don't want to come across as a hero, but I bought Rachel a necklace this month. Thank you to Mel Mack for helping me find the outlet. Basically, I had to do this because I've had a lot of comments about how I've never bought Rachel jewelry. I've paid for some that she's picked out, but I've never picked some to get for her. And I got to the stage where Rachel's dad, who has a taste in jewelry that has been passed down to her. So he's got a very good taste in jewelry, but their taste in jewelry kind of matches. And he came to me at one point recently and said, how about I just buy you some jewelry that you can give to her? And I'm like, I need to nip this in the bud. So did that this month. That was a good result. Exercise, ran another 100 kilometers this month, which was pretty good because I got sick in the middle of the month and we did some camping, which was a big introduction, which was a big interruption. So I was pretty happy to be able to get the 100 kilometers out. I've added a little bit of strength work. I'm training for a 14K run in May And I've decided to do a tune-up event in March, which will also be Parch March. So, I'm just trying to take it up a notch, actually. Still on track to do 1,000 kilometers in the calendar year. And the chin-up bar, which I installed earlier this year, getting a little bit of a workout up. I can do 8 chin-ups in one go now and 30 push-ups in one go. And I don't think I've ever done more than 30 push-ups in my life, and I don't think I've ever been able to do more than... Oh, there was one point where I think I got to 9 or 10 chin-ups. So, but long story short, I'm about as strong as I've ever been right now, and it only took 4 or 5 months to put it together. I don't know what that says about me. Finances. I'm on the precipice of signing a lot of work, a couple of good clients coming through, which is really encouraging. So anxiety levels are going down. Now, it's until it becomes about managing workload. I'm not managing load at the moment, but this year is about to get busy. The $400 budget, obviously the necklace for Rachel, like pretty much wiped me out this month, but I've spent money on two things that I'm really excited about that I reckon you guys should have a look at as well. So June 2 is coming out. I'll just tell you why it is that I'm so psyched about this movie. Not only was the first movie excellent, but you got to think about the context of it. So Denis Villeneuve, the director, he pumps out Sicario and Arrival. Arrival's one of my favorite movies of all time. Back to back with a combined budget of about $87 million. And they are commercial and critical hits. And the studios basically go, have $200 million to do whatever you want. And he does Blade Runner 2049. And it bombs. Like, they lost a lot of money on that. There would have been some advisors of him saying, Denny, just do a comic book movie. Just get the juice going in your career again, and then you can get back to taking some chances. And he does Dune. Now, the original Dune that you might have seen when you were kids, a cult classic, was a fucking disaster. It's a mess. And there have been attempts to make Dune, which have all failed in Hollywood. It has become Hollywood's equivalent of Hamlet. You know that old story that you never mention Hamlet in a theater because it's bad luck, because it's such a cursed production? Well, that is Dune. So, like, he has decided to take on a historically fraught, terrifying project. And if the first one had tanked, you've got to ask yourself whether or not he would have continued to get this sort of money to dream this big. And the first one is fucking great. And if the second one lands, which I hope it does, he has $200 million per movie for whatever he wants for the next decade. We want people taking big swings and knocking them out of the park. So go and see Dune 2. Also, it is the 30th anniversary of The Shawshank Redemption. Now, I'll bet most listeners have never seen that on the big screen. They've only would have seen it at home. And at art house cinemas, I'm telling you, look to your local art house cinema, see if they are doing an anniversary screening, because my one is, and I'm booked in to see that later this month. So I'm very excited about that. It is surely on the Mount Rushmore of movies about male friendship. That's what Shawshank Redemption is about. It's about a friendship between two men that helps them get through hard times. And if, like, prison's obviously an exaggerated metaphor, but having kids is hard, and maintaining friendship in the face of stress is a theme that really resonates with me at the moment. So I'm really excited to see that. Vices. All right. Alcohol. Yeah, this got me into trouble last week. I had to repost the episode. Alcohol, caffeine, paracetamol, THC, and LSD. Now, granted, there's a strong tail there. I didn't drink much booze this month. And ahead of Parch March next month, like, I'm actually not intimidated by Parch March at all. Let me tell you about this. So the THC I had via some gummies on a camping trip with some mates after the kids had gone to bed, it was glorious looking up at the stars. The LSD I took at home, the kids are out, like no chance of them coming home. And it was a glorious trip. You know, I managed to explore some of my elevated stress levels from last year. It became clear how much less stressed I am this year, which was really good. And I ended up having a swim on a 35 degree day. That was just amazing. So super happy about that. What am I reading and watching this month? Finished off True Detective, North Country. That show kind of ran out of gas. It was a pretty classic short series where the first three episodes are really cool and then they kind of write a bunch of checks that they can't really land. Still finishing off my book, Dad News Around Me. So a bit of news that I forgot from January. Josh and Beck had their second. Forgot to mention that last month. And just a little bit of a curiosity that I came across, the word toddler comes from a Scottish word toddle. The exact origins are a little bit opaque, but the earliest meaning of it is to play, and the noun toddler means child just learning to walk. So that's where the word comes from. I thought that was cool. Listener questions. G'day, OMDB podcast. Here's a common scenario. You and another parent are overseeing your children playing together, except that both kids want to play with the same toy. Inevitably, one parent wants to teach their child to wait their turn, while the other parent wants to teach the child to share. And the kids get very mixed messages. I actually tried suggesting to some dad mates that we should come up with some sort of protocol, i.e., you know, one more minute and then it's time to share. Then you can have just the one parent intervene. I'm not fussed at all with other people telling my child off. But the idea didn't get much traction. Would love to hear your thoughts. That's Richard in Malvern. Yeah, Richard, I totally get it. I wish there was a little bit of a protocol for parents. The two things that I've kind of taken out of this is try to hang out with parents that are just kind of cool and kind of chill. It's how chill or tight are the parents that you're hanging out with. I find that when I'm hanging out with anxious parents, there's more disagreement over the particulars of how our children should be allowed to play together. And if I'm hanging out with relaxed parents, then it's more relaxed about what rules are applied to them or which parent is applying the rules. Like, I don't mind if another parent not tells Hazel off, but engages with her and enforces some rules that are different to mine, because that is how it works. You are going to be interacting with people, organizations that have different rules to mum and dad. And having to just make peace with that is really good for them. And if the parents, you know, pretty chill anyway, then I'm like, I just don't really give a shit. But in terms of setting up protocols, there's too much variation between parents to, you know, really have any agreement. And the amount of time that you spend with parents like that is actually pretty limited. So fuck the protocol, like just enjoy talking. Like, hopefully the kids are going off playing by themselves and they can sort their own shit out. And then you guys can talk about how bloody stressful it is to have children. And the other thing is, you know, Hazel is a very reserved girl. She can be very quiet. And so one of the things that we've been dealing with is not giving toys up, but making sure that you are not denied your right to play with the toy. We're teaching her assertiveness. And that's a big problem that a lot of kids deal with. They're not able to assert themselves, and you want them to become assertive adults within reason. You don't want them smacking people around. But that is the other component of sharing. And a lot of the time, I think sharing ends up being about the child that wants the toy gets the toy. And just being able to teach a child, no, this is my turn, you will get your turn soon, is also pretty cool. So thank you, Richard, for your question. So thank you, Richard, so much for your question. Really appreciate it. We should have another hit of tennis. There's a bit of an insight to where that comes from. Dear OMDB podcast, I've got a 2-year-old that's just started having serious meltdowns, and I can't tell you how much it stresses me out. Oh, fuck, I've been there. I try to manage my stress levels, but it's overwhelming. What can I do? That listener hasn't given his location, so I'm going to call him Adam from Constantinople. Adam, there wouldn't be many people from Constantinople called Adam, but anyway, honestly, get out to as many child-friendly places as possible and listen to other parents of children having meltdowns. Now, I'm not saying listen to it for cues about how they handle it, but when a meltdown is happening, you forget that it's happening to parents all the time. You feel like it's only happening to you because the person who is having the meltdown, you love more than anything else in the world. So the more you can see it happening to other people, the easier I find it becomes to deal with. Like, seriously, it's technically speaking, it's quite rude to watch a parent dealing with a child that's having a meltdown. But anytime I see it happening, I just go, I have been there before. I know how hard it is. You just have to weather the storm and the children's meltdown will subside. And that becomes so much easier for me, which means that the next time my child has a meltdown, it's so much easier to deal with. I mean, But I've totally been there. I remember there was a time where I had both, I think it was the first time that both kids were with me, and they like both had just epic meltdowns in front of me, and I was just completely overwhelmed. And I had to shut the door to our bedroom. They were outside. And I slammed my left fist down on the bed in frustration and threw my shoulder out. So that, like, I walked away from that experience going, that is counterproductive. And also, like, letting the emotion get to you, all it does is consume energy. The times where I've been dealing with either child having a meltdown where I've let it get to me, I have just found myself getting to the end of the day absolutely exhausted. And that doesn't help anybody. So I would, yeah, get into public situations where you can hear other parents having meltdowns, because that'll tell you that you're not alone. And also reach out to your buddies. Reach out to your mates and go like, hey, I'm dealing with this. And then explain your experience about how difficult it is. I guarantee you will get something reflected back at you that is exactly the same. So thank you very much for those questions, Richard from Malvern and Adam from Constantinople. All right, that is the Sip Rep. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on the last day in March with more dad news, my news, and questions from the audience. And of course, we'll be back on the 15th of March with our next interview show. If you have any questions, hit us up on the socials at OMDB Podcast, or just email me on overmydadbodypodcast@gmail.com. Probably could have come up with a shorter email address, but here we are. Or if you've got my number, just text me. You know, quite a few of my listeners have my number. I know the audience pretty closely at the moment. In the meantime, though, my name's Alex Liddington Cox. Have a good one.